and I think that's it. And I mentioned before, Shmuley, if you could start recording, that would be phenomenal. Oh, great. As I mentioned to some of the Chevra a few minutes ago, I was wondering if Rebbe, if we could possibly start with, I know next week we're not going to be together, even digitally. And I'm wondering, you know, I think Tuesday night is already Tu B'Shvat, if that's something we could discuss a little bit, the avoid of Tu B'Shvat, which is a shtickle, a new yontif in the world, and in Avaida, and what the Avaida of it, the Hashkafa of Chamisha Asar B'Shvat, and what should be our outlook on that day, and the Avaida probably also. Mm.
What have you done until now?
Me personally? Me personally, there's certain extra Yom Tovim in the Bleiberg house. So Tu B'Shvat's a big Yom Tov in the Bleiberg house. There's always a big tish. And when I was in New York, I would go to the Rebbe Ramatel sometimes and, you know, some of the other tzaddikim. Yeah. But more of, you know, the tefillah for the Esrig, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, there's many things to say, many things to talk about. I'll just share just one inyan. Just one inyan. Of course, the Svarim will talk about Ki Adam Eitz Hasadeh, that a person has to see himself as an Eitz. Every single person is an Eitz. And Tu B'Shvat is considered to be like the beginning of the growth of the trees. It's like the season, the oilas raf bilanas, where it's like a hischachus in the oilam of the tzmachem. And this really goes hand in hand with just a kasha which we have, which is that Tu B'Shvat is not really a yontif. You know, it's an up and coming yontif, but it's not a yontif. It's not like Shavuos or Pesach or Sukkot. And there's no Isser Melacha, and there's no Hallel. It's you can go through a Tu B'Shvat and not even know that it was a Tu B'Shvat. There's no Maisa Mitzvah. And the reason why is because Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, the Oiris came down into the Olam HaAsiyah. That this Or came from a high place and it became concretized. It became a mamashas. As such, even in the Olam HaMaisa, the Yontav is tangible. But the Yontav of Tu B'Shvat is potential. It's not an Or which has come into this world that a person can hold on to it and to say, this is what the Yontav is. The only thing perhaps that he can hold on to and to say that this is the yontif is to hold a fruit in his hand, and when he makes on it a bracha boi pia eitz, you can perhaps say that that's like a cheftza shel mitzvah of the yontif. Of course it's not. It's just like a me'ein, it's just like a dugma and a zecher, a simen ba'alma, but it's not mamish a cheftza shel mitzvah. And the reason why is because the whole inyan of a tree, when it's beginning its stages of growth, is that it's in a state of yearning. It's in a state of hoping one day to become a real tree. To have leaves, to have branches, to have peiros. That's what Tu B'Shvat means. And even when we hold the fruit in our hands and we make a bracha, this is not a fruit from this year. This is a fruit from last year. But it's a dugma that a person looks at this fruit and all the trees which are being oilas raf bilanas today, they look at this fruit and they say to it, I see from this fruit what I can be. Because whatever tree gave birth to these fruits, I could be the same thing as that. And that's why a tzaddik has a tish on Tu B'Shvat, even though it's not really a yontif. It's because going to a tish and sitting by a tzaddik, a person who's sitting by the tzaddik, it's like he's like the little tree which is growing in the ground, and he sees the fruit and he holds it in his hand and he says, I could be an eitz just like that. It's a zman of cheshek, it's a zman of kisufin and yearning for greatness. And that world of yearning is not in the realm of ma'isa. It's in the world of machshav, it's in the world of ratzan, it's in the world of kisufin. And so therefore, to identify and to explain why it is that Tu B'Shvat is a yontiv the way that it is, it's like a half-baked yontiv, not even, is because where it is, that's how the yontiv reveals itself. It's not something which comes into the Olam HaMaisa. It's not Asa B'Malacha. There's no Chefza Shal Mitzvah. It's a Zman of Kisufin. It's the Oyla Sraf B'Ilan. It's when a person's fire is awakens within himself that he should bring out all of his potential. And this fruit, this tzaddik, which he sees, he should see himself as being able to achieve greatness just like in his own way, just like the tzaddik. So, we're people like, we like ma'isim. You know, we gravitate towards ma'isim. We like hadracha when we can do things concretely. So even if I tell you, you know, I don't really have a lula for you to shake or anything like that, but you know, there's a knetch in the davening which you could do. So we feel already like it's okay because we're knetching the davening. So, like, let's say on the tainus, yeah? So the fact that we say nachem or we say anenu in the tainus or we say avinu malkeinu, so it makes for a difference and I feel it. There's nothing like that in Tu B'Shvat. Go through a whole Tu B'Shvat, you would not know that it was Tu B'Shvat from regular life. Go to work, same davening, you put on tefillin, there's no special Seder of Limud, nothing. You make a Brit Piyos every other day too. Because the difference is so pnimi, it has to do with Cheshek, it has to do with Ratzon, and that world is not in the world of even Machshava, it's not in the world of Maisa, certainly, it's a higher world, it's why in Pnimiyas, Tu B'Shvat is considered to be like a higher yontev. It's for Bnei Aliyah. A person who's a Ben Aliyah, so then Tu B'Shvat is a yontev by him. Otherwise, it's commercialized with just songs of Tu B'Shvat Igia. That's not yontev. That's not yontev. It's a higher... A person who likes yontev, he likes Shabbos, he likes Rav Moshe B'Kedusha, so he's very happy to incorporate Tu B'Shvat into his world of Yom Tovim. If a person's not, and then just you can go... It doesn't mean anything to me. It's a world of cheshek, though. It's a yontev which is built on cheshek.
Is there anything, I know this goes around now, you know, it used to go around like verbally, now it's going around on the WhatsApp world. Different tilis and starim, they quoted from the Ari to eat 15 different pears. Is there such an Indian from the Ari? I've never seen it inside.
I don't know if it's from the Ari. I forget. But there is a certain seder which is brought down from a kubalim to have different types of fruit, some with the pit, without the pit, the seeds on the outside, seeds on the inside, not have any seeds at all. It corresponds to the Shem Havaya, and I don't know. But the tzaddikim, the chassidish tzaddikim, I haven't seen them be knowing in it. By the mekubalim, I'm sure they do, although I've never been at one. Although I did do one many years ago, but I never was at one. But again, that's for the mekubalim that they know what they're doing, you know, to be involved in that world. Unless a person is mamish lishmanik, like very much lishma, or he has to be able to look at a fruit and to say to it, like, I don't see like a strawberry, I see like an ice hay over here, you know? If he sees it like that, then he can make a seder like that. But if he looks at a fruit and he's like, oh, listen, I like plums better than peaches. You know, like, I hope that peaches are plums are up next, because I can really, really hope that I can have a plum before my peach. And he's not in a tish. He's had, you know, he's good with soinus, but it's not... The sarm weren't meant for people like that. They were meant for higher people, these type of star.
Rabbi Feld, I came to a seder by you once a couple of years ago. You had a Tu B'Shvat seder with lots of fruit. I still remember that.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
Heilig Ayid.
No, Rabbi Feld is already mekubal, but we're not going to like let everybody know it publicly. So.
No, it's a chashav etzach. It's everybody holds of an. By everybody, it's an inyan to have many fruits. It's an inyan to be marbe and peiris. You know. You know, it says man ha'ilanos, that's for sure. But the seder the mekubalim do it, that they have 10 of this and 10 of that and 10 of this and 10 of that, and they have like adal kosos, different types of wines. It's like a whole seder that they do. That's what I'm talking about. You know, that.
But there is a makar for that in the mekubalim. It's not just something.
Yeah, no, it's brought down. Yeah, it's brought down. I don't know if it's from Ari, but it's brought down from people much greater than me that they talk about a certain seder, and it's a mekubal, and people who revealed it, you know, it wasn't from,
Okay. Well, the floor is open. Anybody has a question? Please introduce yourself, ask a question. If not, I can go back to asking more questions. I always have plenty to ask. So I'll mute myself now and feel free.
No one's jumping in?
Go ahead, Rabbi.
For you, fine.
Okay, sorry.
They want to hear your question,
Rabbi Feld. What? I don't know if Rabbi, just throwing questions without any prep and stuff. From my understanding, in terms of being a quote-unquote a victim to somebody else's Bechira, as opposed to Hashgach HaPrat, there's two schools of thought. One is that everything's from Hashem. And then everyone quotes really the Or HaChaim, that you could be a victim to somebody else's Bechira. Does the Rebbe have a Mahalach to show that it's not really a Stira, or how to put that, shdim that whole thing together?
I don't think it's a Stira at all. First of all, the Ari says that the world of it's called the world of Yediyah and the world of Bechira. These are the terms, what they're called, Yediyah and Bechira. That Hashem is Yodei everything. He knows everything which will happen, and he also gives a person bechira. And this is 100% yediyah, and it's 100% bechira. It's not 50-50. It's 100%, 100%. And that's not a kasha, because Hashem is the kol yachal, and he can make 100%, 100%. We have to know that it's a sugya, which is l'malim min haseichel, and it's a neshama dika sugya. That's aleph. So that means to say as follows, that everything, even if a person is a Baal Bechira, I can explain it in a way which is very move-on. Even if a person is a Baal Bechira, he still can't do it without Hashem's Haskama. Hashem's Haskama. Right? That Hashem has to be maskim on it. So right. So a person who is a Baal Bechira, being a Baal Bechira means that I have a force, that I can use my Bechira to do things. But who's to say that everything which you're Bechira to do will actually happen? Right? Many times we're boicher things, and it doesn't happen. Like, I'm boicher that when this pitch is pitched at me, I'm going to hit the ball. Don't always hit it. I had a bechira to hit it, but I didn't hit it. So we strike out many times on our bechiras, and there's a gvul to a person's bechira. And Hashem has the right to, although a person is about bechira, to accept the bechira or to reject the bechira. So even things which a person does where you could say about it that he's a Baal Bechira, he still needs Hashem to sign off on it. So therefore, everything which happens, Hashem has to be maskim to. And if he's not maskim to it, he's not maskim to it. But that Bechira, that choice, not a stira to Hashem's, that every single move that a person makes has to be signed off by Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's a very clear way of understanding it. It's a very clear way. Also note that when a Kadosh Baruch Hu, when a person has, let's say he has a Bechira, and this idea of let's say determining, that Hashem determines what will happen, many times Hashem determines things which will happen as being open-ended, that it can be determined by our actions and by our Bechira. So for example, we say that a person's Parnasa is Katzav from Rosh Hashanah, right? So Katzav Hashanah doesn't necessarily mean that a person is going to make, you know, six digits this year. It can mean that depending on this and this factor, so it will be between this and this. That's also called Gzeirah. That's also a determination. It doesn't mean that it's determined in a way where no matter what a person does, it can't be affected. No. Hashem has a way of being Meshalev, these Inyanim, in ways which are very move on. But the klal is to realize is that as much as we try to explain the Shiluv between these two things, it's important to know that at its shoyrish, even if we can't explain how something can be 100%, 100%, the fact that Hashem is manig the world and a person has a bechira is 100% and 100%. It's something which at its shoyrish is l'mala min
haseichel. Right. So I just want to clarify my question. It's there's a, seems like two different shitas in terms of being a victim to somebody else's bechira, like by Yosef and the brothers, right? The sheet over there that they threw him in the pit because they thought he was a tzaddik, that's from Hashem. But to overcome the brothers' bechira, that's a different thing, that the Or HaChaim holds that somebody else's bechira can over... You could be a victim to somebody else's bechira as opposed to having a muna. No, everything's Hashem. That's my question, understanding those two approaches, especially the idea of being a victim to somebody else's bechira.
So I think it falls into the same discussion. First of all, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh is the Zohar. It's really not the Or HaChaim, it's the Zohar HaKadosh. Right. The Zohar says that. So that's Aleph. Beis, this principle that a person can be victim to another person's bechira is a Gemara. The Gemara says, Tzadik Goyzev HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim. That means that Hashem allows the Tzadik to be balabas on certain things. That Pashto Pshat, what that means is that if the Tzadik says Azoy, so Hashem says, okay, if you say like that, then I agree. So in this case, especially, the Shvatim were Tzadikim Gemurim. Mamish. They took this upon themselves from their koyach of Tzadik Goyzev HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim. So the principle of Tzadik HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim means that a Baal Bechira can have a certain koyach in the Bria. Not that if Hashem would object to it, of course he could object to it. But there's a certain hanhaga that Hashem is banning the Bria, that he's masking with the decisions of a tzaddik. And a tzaddik is a real Baal Bechira. The biggest Baal Bechira in the world is a tzaddik. A rasha and a guy and an animal, that's not called Bechira. It's a totally different category. Real Bechira is to be B'Tselem Elokim, and such a Bechira like that of a tzaddik is a real Bechira. That's what it means that Racham is talking about. That he says that the reason why they sold him as opposed to the snake is because, the snakes don't have a Bechira. It's not really a Bechira. Bechira is a tzaddik has a real koyach of Bechira.
So the Rebbe is saying it's only nogea by a tzaddik, but you're not ever a victim to another person who's less than a tzaddik. It's, you're always under 100% hashkafa from Hashem when it comes to stam people. That the Zohar Or HaChaim is only going on a tzaddik? Is that how the Rebbe's learning that?
No, not only. But not everybody is a Baal Bechira the same. That's the idea. And so, whereas a Baal Bechira, who is a tzaddik, he can make a choice and to say, I want to determine what's going to happen now, and Hashem agrees to that. Meaning Hashem has a certain, conducts the world in a way where he has a certain respect for a Talmud Chacham, for a tzaddik, that if the tzaddik, who's a real bardas, and he has a real havana, and he's an amkan, and he understands how things go, that when the tzaddik says, I want to be geizer, Hashem says, part of the way that I run the world is with the principle of tzaddik HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim. That's a reshus that Hashem gives because of the respect that he has for a Talmud Chacham, for a tzaddik. Not so by regular person who is not a tzaddik, where if he comes along and he says, I want so-and-so to happen, Hashem says, not so fast, buddy. Like, there's a lot of things that you don't understand, and he doesn't have the same koyach ha-bechira to say, this one's on me. Hashem is much more shoylet on what goes on because he's not on the level of tzaddik geizer. So that's the idea. The idea is that although when we talk about free will, not all free wills are created the same. A yid has a higher free will than a guy, and a guy has a higher free will than an animal, and an animal has a higher free will than a daimim. But even in the realm of Bnei Yisrael, a tzaddik has a higher bechir and a stronger koyach bechira. To which a tzaddik has a bechir where he can even be geizer and kadosh baruch hu, but that's part of it that Hashem is manig the bria. Hashem is maskim that he created the system that way. So since he created it that way, it's almost like Hashem signs off and Hashem says, that's my bechira. My bechira is to go along with your bechira. But you have to be a big toikif and a koyach in your own bechira that Hashem should go along with it.
Okay, thank you.
I want to follow up with that. First of all, my name is Menachem Geller. Nice to meet you. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, first of all, my whole life, I always heard a very core belief in Yiddishkeit is Hashkacha Pratis. That even a leaf that moves, you know, that seems completely inconsequential, that Hashem has some higher goal for that, a very conscious goal for anything that happens, no matter how insignificant. Is that Pashit? Because I've been told by many people that there's a big machlokas in terms of Hashkacha Pratis versus Hashkacha Klalis. What's the proper way to view that?
Okay, very important
question. Because that was a big shock to me, and it really messed with my head, to be honest. Because that's a big difference, to think that no matter what it is, everything Hashem's doing everything intentionally to, well, maybe not everything. That really kind of blew my mind.
Everything.
Everything. Okay, but...
It blows your mind, but it doesn't blow your neshama, because your mind your mind can't understand it, because the seichel wasn't created to understand it. It's created to be maskim to it. But here's a very easy way to explain and to understand it. Hashem is everywhere, yeah? Everything exists within Hashem. Hashem is everywhere. So, let me ask you a question. Are you conscious of everything which goes on your body?
No.
No? My daughter, she came out the other day, she's like, Tati, when I go like this on your beard, do you feel this on your face? Do you feel this? I said, yeah, I feel it. I feel it because when you pull like this, so I feel it over here on my face. Everything in the Bria is the Ribbono Shel Olam. Everything in the Bria exists within Hashem. He feels everything. He knows everything. He's conscious of everything. And everything has a purpose. We can't understand that because as human beings, we're not on the level to be able to conduct ourselves in such a way, because we're not such great people yet. But it's known about people in previous generations that they wouldn't even blink. The Chayza wouldn't even blink his eyes without a yichud, without a kavana. Blink. He had a yichud for every time he blinked, he had a kavana while he was blinking. It says about the Maggid from Mezrich that when he would give a shir, and he would use his hands to go like this and to explain topics. So he would do that with kavana, every movement. If in the middle of explaining something, he was going like this, and he didn't have a reason, or the reason was no longer there, why he should continue going like this, he would hold his hand in this place until he had a reason to move it. Like that. Until he had a yichud and a reason to move it, he would hold his hand like that. These were people that they didn't move an iota. Didn't move an iota without having an intention, some type of a kavana. In Avodas Hashem. And the same thing is true for sure. They learned that from Hashem Yisbarach. Everything from the biggest thing to the smallest thing has to do with certain tikkunim and neshamas. There's neshamas and leaves and when they fall and how they fall. Everything. It's not a machlekes anymore. Although the Rambam spoke about what he called Hashkacha Klalis, you know, and the Ramban argued with the Rambam, and then the Baal Shem Tov came along, and all the Mekubalim, they paskin like the Ramban. You know, the Ramban wasn't exposed to Pnimiyas HaTorah, to Kabbalah, although the Ramban was. And this is a sugya which emerges from Pnimiyas HaTorah. And today, the notion of not being Mekabel, Hashkacha Pratis, is like unheard of. It was perhaps debatable in times before there was the Gilui of the Or of Torah, Pnimiyas HaTorah, which came along, you know, with the Arizal and with Reb Shimon Bar Yochai and the Vilna Gaon and the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh and the Ramchal, which has conquered the world. And everybody, you know, once that Or reached the world and took it over, so there's no such thing anymore of having Emunah and Hashkacha Klalis as opposed to Hashkacha Pratis. It doesn't exist.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, it's quiet for too long. I have a question that I think is very esoteristic for, in general, for sure for our cover right now. Davening is a very important part of what we're trying to do together. And also, just, you know, getting the chevra together and singing the gunim and febrenging, whatever it is. How much, this is where we need Rabbi's hadracha. How do we balance the davening to the singing davening, and where do they fit together? on one end of the spectrum, you have a full-blown Karl Bachmanian, which I'm not anti, I'm just going to put it out there. Rabbi Shua, we know how you, Rabbi Shua Samowitz is our official Karl Bach chazan in town. And then we have the other side of the, you know, the Kail, you know, the real Litvish Kail Friday night, where you only can sing by Kabbalah Shabbos the Chadayi, and the rest of the time davening, it's kind of just saying it and hopefully not, you know, just learning a Gemara while you're davening, but also, yeah. So at what part of the, what could be a balance? Should there be certain parts that are specifically sung? How much does Nagina fit into the davening Seder?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like you said, there needs to be a Seder. There has to be a Seder, you know, which works. Again, like we spoke about before, and not in this context, but that there has to be a Seder which can where it's open to certain, you know, a certain expansion. You know, it has to be open to some wiggle room, but it should be defined so that it doesn't become hefker. You know, it can't be too tight, and then it can't be hefker either. So it's not something which you know, you may establish right away. You know, you try and you work it and you see how it goes. But it's not something which we could be koveya, you know, in a sitting like this, especially because there's many tefillas. There's Kabbalah Shabbos, there's Shacharis, there's Musaf, and I mean, there's Yom Tov, and you know, everything needs its own definition. But it should be defined. It should be defined. But you know, it should be undefined and understood, and the Baal Tefillah should know. And the main chaverim in the shul should know who are going to be carrying the nigun, you know, what to be expected. And sometimes when it's very gishmak, so there should be room to be myself a little bit, you know, but not in a way where it's hefker. You know, people should know what to expect and what they're coming for. But you know, when something is very gishmak, so then you should be able to ride it out and to be yearning from it much more. But like everything else, it needs a seder, it needs a gvul, and it needs to have the right balance between that it shouldn't be schleppy, but it should be from the right place, and also what type of nigunim are sung, you know, that should also be defined. You know, not everything is chayk v'layavar. You're going to have people who are going to get up and they're going to do things, and it shouldn't be like an avla, as long as that there's a consistency. So if things are yotzim in a klal every once in a while, so it won't stare the system. But that there should be a certain seder, which is, you know, without, you know, mamish hakpada, it has to have wiggle room, like we said. But it's something which, you know, we can't define al regalachas, but that's just the klal of it, is that it should be strong, it should be a gvul which protects the davening, not that it's metzamsim or takes away chas v'shalom. But it should be what fortifies the davening, which gives it its stability, it gives it its structure, it gives it its kvias, that allows the davening to be its expression of yearning for Hashem and striving and closeness and excitement for Hashem, that it fortifies it but doesn't strain it or strangle it.
If I can show you how, I guess that's a question on what you said. Never saw it inside, and they never had a real answer. But it's a baby Friday night. So I don't know whether anybody's sitchin is, but generally speaking, by the chassidim, it's the first from the chadaydi through Yisrael is a slower name, right? And then the lo yisaveshi till the end is the later name.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any thoughts on why that is? Why that was accepted? Why that, you know, what was the union?
Can you repeat the question? I couldn't understand.
Oh, sorry. So by generally speaking,
well, let the rub. Oh, it's hard to hear you, Shmuley.
Yeah, it's hard to hear a little bit.
Yes, but sorry, it's my computer. Rav had a question, just for the Chadaydi Friday night.
Yeah.
The Indian by the Chassidim is the first stanzas from the Chadaydi till to his Tzadri is slow. The environment is going to march, you know, by Ger, by all these places. And then Lysi Voshi till the end is a labor day, confessing, right? And what's the
makar?
Is there a makar to it? What's the reasoning?
No, if there's mamish a makar, you know, it's you could say it's almost like minag Yisrael, you know, to do that, mamish minag Yisrael, but it's, you know, it's accepted. I think the pshat is because, you know, we're talking about l'chadoidi, we're talking about a chasna, l'kraskala. And the way that a chasna works is that, you know, when you're going to at the chuppah, it's slow. You know, it's slow nigunim, it's more pnimi, that's when it's, you know, it's when it's being chal. And then afterwards, you know, when it's chal, so then it's like, it's leibedik. You know, the seder is like, it goes from pnimius to chitzonius. You know, first you have to hit the nekudas halev, and then when you hit the nekudas halev, so then all the other ivarim can be opened up and to be mishtatef in that nekuda. There has to be a hispashtus from the nekudas halev. So first the slow nigan allows like a certain knisa b'sei halev to enter into the pnimius of the heart. And then once that's achieved, so then the simcha through the dancing and through the fast nigan, where all the ivarim become part of the simcha, is like a natural flow. It's not just, you know, if we look at it as like there's fast nigunim and there's slow nigunim, and then you can ask a question, it seems kind of random, why can't we just do it the opposite way? Why does it have to be this way? But it's not like that. The dancing and the singing has to come from where the nekudas halev becomes nisayir, and then there's a hispashtus to all the ivarim. But it has to be in that seder. It has to be in the seder from which that the nekudas halev is open, and then that gives birth to the simcha, which allows all the ivarim to participate from the hispash to halev.
But is that a seder to with the ruach coming in by kala, or no? The ruach comes in by rishon, right at the end.
The nefesh,
so
the nefesh.
You're in the chassan then, right? No seder.
No, not really. I don't know if they mamash have to go hand in hand. If you could be mishalev it, then yeah, the fact that you're right that the nefesh does come in by boychal boychala. If you could shtim it, then it would be better. You have to be ma'ayin in that a little bit more, but you don't have to do it. You don't have to shtim the two things together. You don't have to shtim it together. You find this.
Is the nefesh coming in at the end like the mitzvah tons, right? You know, that's.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Not sure. You could be mishal of it. You could say pshatim. You know, it's not defined in Chassidus or in Kabbalah. You know, this. You know, what parts of accepting the nefesh, ruach, and neshama yisera, how it corresponds to chasna. It's not defined. It's certainly open to drush, and you could maybe say that boy kala is the mitzvah tans. Maybe you could say that. But the yisod is really what we're looking at in the pnimius, which is that when you hit the nekuda saliv, then the dancing is a real dancing. It's not just, you know, you're just acting out what you're supposed to do. That's like Yom Kippur and Sukkot. You know, Yom Kippur is the day where there's a hisgalus and you're oimik halev, and then the simchas beis hashoeim and the dancing which takes place on Sukkot was born out of that nekudas halev which was nisgal and Yom Kippur. And that's really, so it follows that pattern. It's that seder that it should be real. It should be real.
I can continue the question just a little bit. How important is the nigunim and the singing to the davening itself? Why is it that, I mean, assuming there is a very strong connection there, based on the reason the Hasidim are so makbid on the and the davening and the singing together, whereas by Litvak it's not as much of a focus as part of davening, where we see that in the places that are more united to Panemius, that there's a lot more of a connection to davening with the nigun.
Okay, so it has to do with the difference between what a chassid is. You know, a chassid is always the fnei mishuras adin. And a chassid always likes to serve Hashem be'ahava, be'simcha and be'ahava. So nigun brings out the simcha and the ahava and the depth of an oimek in davening. So an oimek in davening. You know, by the Litvak, so there's a mahalach. It's not like they don't take tefillah chashuv. Tefillah is very chashuv. But they're trying to be yotze, the inyan of davening. The inyan of davening is to be oimel lifnei hamelech. It's the yira, it's the noyer of Hashem, and you know that it could be that the davening, in terms of the singing and the halal and the shira, takes away from that noyra, which is really like what the Iker davening is, like the halachic davening, is to make bakashas and to be omer lifnei ha-melech. So they have a mahalach, which is based on the din of what davening is. But a chassid goes lifnei mishuras ha-din. And the chassid knows what Hashem really wants from davening. So when a tzaddik, when a chassid, when he goes ahead and he makes it more libedik, and there's more ava, and there's more shira, and there's more simcha, so to a litvak, he doesn't understand that, because you're taking away from the halach definition in surah what davening really supposed to be. But a chassid knows that what Hashem really wants is that there's the letter of the law, and then there's really what Hashem would really like, what the Ratzon HaMelech is. The Ratzon HaMelech is that Rachman Alibabai, and he wants the heart, and he wants the simcha, and he wants the ahava, and he wants the leibekeit. So, the definition of a chassid, what it means to be lifnei mishuras hadin, and what it means, the definition of how a litvak sees halacha, and therefore how it should be according to halacha, is really the difference between, you know, doing it this way, doing it that way. It's a whole shitasim, which is going on.
So is the shira like a me'ein of a hiddur mitzvah when it comes to davening?
So it goes like this. When you go lifnei mishuras hadin, as long as you do it in a way where it doesn't take away from the halacha, so then it becomes, not only does it become a tosefes, it becomes more chaviv. Because you're being mekayim the real ratzon of what Hashem wants. You understand? This is really what Hashem wants. So although in the checkbook, you know, it may not be exactly the tzura, what it seems like, of the written law, but because it's oymen ala ratzon, and it's not misnagi to the way it should be in halacha, let's say, so then it becomes more chaviv. Let's say a person, he's yoytze his chiyuvim to certain relationships in his family life, right? And then he goes in and he does something lifnei mishuras hadin. They're only going to remember the cherry on top what you did, because it was the cherry on top, but that's what makes it chaviv. Achron chaviv. So, in a certain sense, you're right. The nigunim and the singing and all that stuff, that's really just like a tosefes. But there's a certain ikr which is involved in that. Like there's a certain flavor and there's a certain geschmack, certain tainig which comes from that, you know, even if you don't have it, you're still yoytze tefila, and it's not like me'ikir chiyuv tefila, but those sprinkles on top, and it adds a certain dimension to the davening that if not for that, you wouldn't be margish the chiyus in the davening. There's a certain chiyus which comes from that tosefes.
The last tickle of the Rambam this week says v'ikaru elikim b'chazoka and yayna. So
So the truth is that this inyan that tefillah needs a kol is really, it's almost like that's part of like the halachic davening. You know, it's unfortunate that even places, you know, even places where they daven and they daven serious, if they don't daven with a kol, so you're right, it's not halachically required, but it should be expected that davening should be b'kol. It's the kol yakov.
Is chetanius? Is more focused on the chetanius?
Focus on it, you know, it's just that davening should be b'kol. I'm just, you know, it should be b'kol. And then when the kol is b'shiro, b'zimra, you know, that's already like considered to be tosefes. But akapanim, it would be very good if all places, you know, all shuls in davening adopted that, you know, that the davening should be somewhat b'kol rum, as opposed to a very still davening. Unless a person is mamish bidvekis, you know, like that he can't talk, he can't be mighty a call. So I think we all see and we all know that when the kehila davens b'kol, not that they're screaming, it's not enough to be, like Carlin Stolen or anything like that, which is a shita that they daven very loud. That's like a mahalach. Everybody who davens, that they say the words which they're saying in a way where they can at least hear it to themselves, like, you know, what they're saying. Those koilas blend together and it creates a certain tzura and tefila, which it gives a tremendous chashivas and a maisa and a shtaltz to the davening, where even if very serious people are davening together, but there's no kol, that you feel like it's dead. It's just Yechidim davening together. When the koilas blend together, it creates a certain new level of tefillah b'tzivur that that's very powerful.
Rabbi, Ari Lasky here. Not specifically in tefillah, because I think tefillah is a little bit different, but in a more general sense, is there any danger with jumping to Avas Hashem before first going into Yiras Hashem? I know the Rebbe was talking about Ava, and you know, the Hasidus is going Lifnei Mishur Hadin and doing Avodas Hashem B'Ava, but is there any danger in maybe going to the Ava without first getting in the Yira, which might make the Ava not a real Ava?
It's a very difficult question to answer, because there's like the way that the Svarim talk about it, and then there's the way that we do it. So that's such a question which is so nogea to us, because we're kind of taking whatever we can get. So I'm not sure how it's like such a nogea type of a question, unless your question is like to be mamik in a certain sugya, meaning, you know, if a person, let's say, has a choice to invest himself in doing a mitzvah b'yira, like as a mahalich, or doing mitzvahs as a be'ava, as a shita, if that's your question, maybe it's something we can discuss. But I think that for the most part, I think that we come to, let's say, to davening to do mitzvahs with a certain tmimus, and I don't even know if we're focused so much on whether or not we're doing it b'yir or b'ava. We kind of do it with a certain tmimus. So I'm struggling to understand if your question is more of like a lemaisa type of a question, or if it's more of like a machshava question in avodas Hashem. Maybe you want to clarify.
I think more of a machshava.
Yeah, machshava question. So then the yira comes before ava. Yira does come before Ava. That's a very strong principle in Avodas Hashem. But you, and practically speaking, though, a person is going to have flashes of Ava and moments of Ava, where if a person is like, let's say he's working on Yira, that if he has moments of Ava and Simcha, he's not going to be like, I'm not ready for that now. Like, don't bring in things from the higher world. I'm not holding in the world of Ava. I'm not holding in that. That's certainly not true. So, in Machshava, yes, that's the klal, is that Yira comes before Ava, and a person who is Isaac in the Indian of Yira, then Ava comes to him. That's the way it's learned by the Chassidim. So Mitzan Machshava, just in Pnimis HaTor, in the Emek of the Machshava of it, so then Yira comes before Ava. And you can't say that it's mamish a mistake if a person, you know, dabbles in Ava. He's sure saying be mitzapeli Ava, and he wants to serve Hashem be Ava. But in terms of like the Seder, the strict Seder Hadvarim, Yira comes before Ava. Yeah.
I think we're getting late. Rabbi, do we have time for one more question, maybe? Okay, one more question.
Okay, I'll take it, just because it's burning me up, this question. This is Menachem again. It's a big question, so I don't know if it's we'll see how long it's going to take. It might be for the next call. I mean, this is my personal issue, maybe more than some other people struggle with it. But my issue or my question is in terms of Emunas Chachamim. In general, when you're talking about Emunas Chachamim, and you're talking about, you know, when you're learning Gemara or Svarim from yesteryear, Rishonim, Achronim, that's not an issue so much for me personally, that whatever they're saying, that there's an Emuna, that there's truth to it, there's no doubt in my mind that what's going on, you know, these people are on a level that I can't understand, etc. The thing that I struggle with is the whole concept, not only of... not only of a tzaddik, but let's say a rebbe. The idea of asking a rebbe for everything, for all any practical questions in your life, and of course the rebbe has to know you and understand you, etc., etc. But I know a lot of people who they ask their rebbe for something, and no matter what they think they should do, even if it goes completely opposite, if their rebbe says it, they do it. I've had trouble with that because the reality is, I mean, nowadays, maybe more than in the past, that people are flawed. And even people that are considered Talmidei Chachamim, and even people that know a lot of Torah, and even people that are well regarded as, you know, Rabbeim, they can make mistakes. I mean, I think that's fair to say. So where does my, and so then I feel like my emunah is lacking. Maybe you can just kind of elaborate a little bit about nowadays how a person should, you know, treat their Rebbe and while not completely disregarding their own intellect.
That's a very good question. So try to be brief and because we can hopefully we could share it very quickly and with at least the ascites of it. There's different levels and different types of rabbis. Not all rabbis are the same. A regular person who's a rav. Is going to be different than a person's personal Rebbe, and that's going to even be different than, let's say, a real tzaddik of the generation. Now, unless a person is a Baal Ruach Kodesh, so then his eitzah, his advice, or his eitzah, his adracha, whatever his responses are to certain questions in life, are just eitzahs. They're not demands, they're not mitzvahs, they're not commands, they are just eitzah. And the pasuk says, "Teshua berov yoetz," that a person finds Yeshua's by asking a lot of advice. Right? That's the way that Rav Chaim Volozhiner learns that pasuk. That a person should ask a lot of rabbanim, a lot of friends, a lot of people whose eitzes he trusts, to get a lot of different perspectives and viewpoints on matters, so that he can make the right decision. A person should know that he is fully capable of making decisions in his life. And the MS, he is the only one who knows, not the only one, but he knows better than other people what the right mahalach is. And a person's intuition is important, not that he should go on his gut or his initial response to things. You know, it's very raw, usually, and he doesn't know how to interpret it. But by asking a lot of questions and to many people who he trusts and gathering a lot of advice, he's able to put many perspectives together and to come to a conclusion which works for him, and to almost like to touch up and to interpret, you know, the inertia that he's feeling inside, which is kind of steering him in a certain direction. Most people who we ask advice to falls into the category of teshua berov yoetz, which means that by asking a lot of advice, we're able to come to a conclusion which works for us. So, therefore, the notion of going to a shul rav and asking him a question and just taking it at face value and just acting on whatever he says, especially if he's just giving advice and he's not giving a psak, is amaratzis. It's just a lack of knowledge in terms of how to understand, you know, the relationship between a rav and a congregant and how to take advice and what's a psak and what's not a psak. There is a different category, though, for a person's personal Rebbe and also for a Baal Ruach HaKodesh. A person who is a known Baal Ruach HaKodesh, so then he doesn't give Eitzah, you know, based on like what he thinks would be right generally for a situation like this. Being a Baal Ruach HaKodesh means that he's able to understand the Inyan and its Shairish and its roots, and he may even see it better than you see it. Meaning you may have the intuition as to know what to do because it pertains to your life, but you don't know how to touch it up. But a Baal Ruach HaKodesh is able to see it probably even better than the person who's looking at it, because it's a tzaddik, and the person who's a Baal Ruach HaKodesh has gifted with certain insights. So that type of advice is what Rabbi Nachman says about the pasuk Teshua Berov Yoetz. He learns that Teshua Berov Yoetz means like Berov Yoetz, like there's a certain person who can give an Eitzah, like a tzaddik MS who can give an Eitzah, that Eitzah is a different type of an Eitzah. It's a higher Eitzah. And it's able to reveal to a person and to say to him, this is what should be done. But that's a very high madriga, and it's very rare that we ask people advice like that. What kind of falls in between these two categories is a person's personal Rebbe, who is not a very big tzaddik, but he's at least a person's personal Rebbe, and that gives him a special place in a person's life. Because in Chassidus and in Pnimis HaTorah, a Rebbe is considered to be the shayrish of his neshama, and he's able to see things and to understand things perhaps even better than the person himself. So if a person, let's say, has a Rebbe in his life where he feels that, not just that he likes that person, but he feels about that person that he has a special place in his life and he has a connection to him and his neshama and so on, and he's designated a person as such, So that person's Eitzah will have much, much, much more weight than even a regular Rav. Might not even be so regular. It may be very Chashev Rav. But even if a person's Rebbe is not on a higher Darga than another Talmud Chacham, but he's my Rebbe, then the fact that he's my Rebbe and his Keshet that he has to my Neshama will give him a very powerful influence in my life and the process of decision which I make, which will be more than anybody else, pretty much, except or even equal to a Tzaddik Emes. So really we've defined three categories. There's like, you know, regular people, even regular Rabbanim, who they give Eitzah, and of course there will be different layers and classifications in terms of how much I'm machshev people's advice, but everybody has something valuable to say. And even person who doesn't have anything valuable to say, you may know what to do because you'll do the opposite of what he says. You know, you can always learn from everybody. Yekom alam da hiskalti. And then there's a higher category, which is a tzaddik emes, and that advice is because they see it. That's called zeh hadavar. They see actually what should be done. And what's kind of in between, but what's in a higher category, is like a person's personal Rebbe, where although he may be regular to other people, but because of his influence and his place in my life, so then that advice also has the power, maybe like of a tzaddik emes, because he understands my shayrish and has a kesher to my shayrish, and that has more of a powerful influence. I'll just conclude with saying one thing, though, is that we don't always know based on what happens, whether or not the advice was right or wrong. Because we have expectations of how things should go, in terms of what's right or what's wrong, what was good or what was not good, doesn't mean that the advice was not good advice. Meaning, to me, it may seem like it wasn't good advice because of my expectations, because I was hoping for these results, and these results didn't happen. But it doesn't mean that from the big picture, that what best happened didn't happen. I mean, if a person goes to a tzaddik emes and he gives advice and a person goes on it and it's opposite as to what he had hoped would happen, it doesn't mean that it was wrong advice. It means that it was probably the right advice. It's just that my expectations don't allow me to see it as the right advice. So that factor, having that humility, is a very important part of the process as well.
Wow. Okay. Shkodach Rabbi, thank you so much. I know it's already really late. We much appreciate you taking time out for us.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I know next week we're not on, so in 2 weeks we'll regroup, and that'll be the last chavur before the official opening of the shul and the Same. First minyan. And I'm sure we'll have a lot of questions before then. I know I do. And we're looking forward to it a lot. Thank you so much, Rabbi, for being here for us.
Okay, it's a pleasure. It's nice to see everyone again.